Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 6 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Thursday, May the 19th. Special coverage of President Obama's speech on the Middle East and North Africa coming your way. We will welcome in UW-Madison History Professor Jeremy Suri to preview the speech. And then National Public Radio coverage will begin at 10:20 this morning. The president is expected to speak at 10:40. We do not know for how long. Later today, we will have more reaction and analysis of what the president had to say. But let me welcome in our guest. Jeremy Suri is a professor of history, director of the European Union Center for Excellence at UW-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Why is the president giving this speech today?
Well, I think there are two reasons why. One, he's really trying to get out in front of a set of major transformations that are occurring in an important part of the world where we don't have very much control. And he's trying to get out in front and have some influence on these events. And one of the ways he can do that is by using his bully pulpit, as well as pursuing particular policy initiatives. I think the second reason he wants to do this is he wants to show at home that he has leadership skills and can stand above party and can offer what he thinks is a positive portrayal of these issues when he's thinking about potential opponents at home.
Yeah. You know, at first we thought this was going to be a lot about the killing of Osama bin Laden and relations with Pakistan, but it turns out not so much.
Right. I'm sure the killing of bin Laden will come up in this speech, but I think what the president is going to focus on are the changes that are occurring in the Middle East, the participatory changes, the challenges to long-established authoritarian and, in some cases, brutal rulers in the region. And he's going to want to articulate how the United States wants to support the progressive changes in an orderly, stable way. He's also going to want to try to push, in particular, the Israelis and the Palestinians towards some kind of productive negotiation.
So how he's going to talk about more U.S. economic aid for countries in the region that are supporting democracy. Who is that?
Well, I think he's going to try in particular to offer a big aid package to Egypt. What we have in Egypt now is a transitional government that's very interesting to watch. This is the government that replaced Mubarak after the protests, but it still is a military-led government. And I think what the White House is concerned about is not only the regimes like Libya and Syria that are cracking down on the protesters, but those like Tunisia and Egypt that have entered this period of transition. How do we incentivize the transitions to go in a positive direction? How do we disincentivize the military leaders in Egypt from trying to hoard power for themselves?
Yeah, the administration did announce some sanctions against Syria. It is expected that the president will defend those sanctions today. Do they really need much defense?
I don't think so. I think what Bashar Assad, the leader of Syria, has shown is a marked brutality and a willingness to not only fire upon his own people, but rule at almost all costs. And we need to make a moral statement against that, but I think also we need to make it more costly for him.
Mm-hmm. And what will he say about Libya?
That'll be very interesting. I think he will argue that the NATO air support has kept the rebel forces alive. We know Gaddafi has done everything he can to try to smother them. And I think the president will argue that progress is being made, but he'll also make the case that the United States is not doing this alone. He's going to try to argue that the United States, in contrast to prior years, is pursuing a multilateral set of partnering policies with not just NATO allies, but countries in the region that have supported this. And he's going to want to argue that we are supporting Middle East self-determination, not external influence in the region.
What is your assessment of how the administration has reacted to what's being called the Arab Spring, the uprisings?
Yeah. Well, they get a B in my grade book on this. Maybe it's at the end of the semester, so I'm grading everyone right now. But they get a B because I think we need to begin by recognizing how hard this is. These events are happening in real time in front of us. Every country has its own unique characteristics, its own unique authoritarianism, and its own unique movements now. And there are a lot of concerns as to whether extremists will hijack these movements. I think the Obama administration has been pretty good about reacting in ways that support these changes in each case, but also don't support extremist or dangerous elements. They get a B, though, not an A, because I don't think they figured out how to get ahead of the headlines. They've been reasonably good in tactically reacting, especially in Egypt, I think. But they have not articulated a vision or a strategy for going forward, and that's really hard. But I'm going to be listening for that in today's speech.
Yeah. Historically speaking, is the Arab Spring a major turning point?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Regardless of what happens from here, the region will not be the same for three reasons. The authoritarians who survive, and I hope there are very few who do, will feel far less secure, Joy. Second, we have seen true civil society, particularly in Egypt, even in Yemen, in Syria, and that will not go away, as it didn't go away in Iran when it was crushed. And third, it has put a new burden on us to think through our relationships with some of the dictatorial regimes that we've been far too comfortable with, and I include the Saudi regime here. Americans now have to recognize that those regimes are not going to last forever, and we better get on the side of change rather than just sticking with the old inherited dictators.
Mm-hmm. Well, so how do we get on the side of change?
That's a good question. I think there are a couple of things we need to do. One, the president has to do today. He has to show that he cares. People in the streets have to really believe that. They have to believe that the president of the United States is on their side, and that takes more than a few words. It takes more than a little bit of money. It takes a real sense, and he has the potential to do that. Second, I think we need to invest in long-term institution building in the region. I'm less concerned about the amounts of economic aid. A lot of that gets wasted. I'm more concerned about what are we supporting. Are we supporting a free press? Are we supporting higher education? Are we supporting exchanges so people from that part of the world can come here? Are we training ourselves to understand that part of the world better? What made a big difference in places like Japan and South Korea after World War II was that we did those kinds of things. We need to do those things in the Middle East. We have not done nearly enough.
Mm-hmm. What is he going to say or expect regarding the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
I think he's going to continue to try to put pressure on Israel and Prime Minister Netanyahu, who's in the United States now. He's going to try to put pressure on him to make a deal with the Palestinians. A deal that would include returning the West Bank and many other occupied territories. At the same time, he's going to try to voice strong support for Israel. He's going to try to play both sides, rhetorically support Israel. But in reality, this is a president who believes, rightfully or wrongfully, that the Israelis need to make more concessions than they've made.
Yeah. What kind of concessions does he want from Israel?
Well, I think he's going to want them to actually work with Hamas. Prime Minister Netanyahu said in the Israeli Knesset a few days ago he would not work with Hamas. Hamas, however, is an important part of the Palestinian leadership. They might be one of the few groups that actually has legitimacy among Palestinians. They are also a terrorist group. And so threading that needle is very difficult. But I think the president wants Netanyahu to, in some ways, work with some elements of Hamas. That's the only way you could have a stable solution there.
Yeah. I was looking at a story from Yahoo News that says, where is this from? This is an Associated Press story that says that he's going to talk about the push. He's going to push for better security in the region, which will include the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Any idea what that push for better security in the region would be?
Well, I think it's going to involve a number of things. I think one, demilitarization, trying to reduce the influx of weapons and other materials into the region. I think, secondly, trying to get the government in the region to focus less on the use of their militaries and more on investments within their own societies. I mean, that's the most striking thing to me, how overarmed these societies are, and with the exception of Israel, undereducated and underfinanced internally. Yeah. So I think he's going to talk in those terms. He's going to emphasize the United States' role in trying to assure stability in the region.
Professor Suri, do the protesters in the Arab countries want American help, or do they distrust the United States?
A great question. Both. They want U.S. help. They've been asking for it, and they need it, especially the rebels in Libya, those in Syria, those in Bahrain and elsewhere. They need our help. They need us, first of all, to pay attention to them. By virtue of our paying attention to them, that raises the cost for anyone cracking down against them. They, of course, need money and weapons, sometimes air support, as in Libya. So they want a lot from us. And they, in many ways, want things from our society, too. They want a more open culture. On the other hand, they distrust our interests in the region, and they have good reason to distrust that. Time and again, over the last 50 years, we have sided with dictators who promise us oil access and stability rather than open democratic change. Mubarak was one of the largest recipients of American military aid for quite a while in Egypt. So they have reason to distrust why we would help them. And I think their perspective, these are very savvy people, Joy. They want our help, but they want to determine what the help is used for.
Yeah, and how does the U.S. make sure that these movements aren't taken over by extremists?
Well, again, I think that's less about saying who can and who shouldn't be involved. And I give the Obama administration credit for not doing that, not creating artificial red lines, not mm-hmm. naming people and categorizing them. But I think the best way to assure then that the wrong people don't take control of these movements, don't hijack them, is to invest in institutions that make it harder for those people. So one of the reasons that many of the fundamentalist groups have been so powerful is that they have functioning institutions that educate people, that feed people, that provide social safety nets that societies don't have. We need to be investing in secular education. Why is it that in some of these societies, the madrasas are the best schools? They shouldn't be. We should be investing in secular schools. And we've done this successfully in something like the American University in Cairo. We should be investing in a free press so people aren't relying upon getting news from a religious figures, but through a secular free press. And so we should be investing in those kinds of institutions that will disempower not necessarily the people who are part of extremist groups, but will disempower extremist ideologies.
Yeah. Does Congress have to get behind the president on these issues?
It always helps. Yeah. It might be asking too much.
I mean, is it going to take a lot of persuasion, I guess, on the president's part?
I think it's not going to take too much persuasion to articulate the goals. I think it's going to take a lot of persuasion when the president goes and says, show me the money. Congress is not in a mood to spend money on anything right now. And there are, again, good reasons for that. We have a lot of debt and we have a lot of problems at home that need addressing. And so articulating principles is probably the easier task. The harder task is setting this as a high enough priority that it gets the resources it needs. The worst thing we can do, Joy, is talk a big game and then do very little, because then we lose all credibility.
We have less than a minute. What's your best case picture of how things unfold in the region?
My best case is that over the next year to two, we see more events like in Egypt, where in Yemen, in Syria, in Libya, in Iran, maybe leaders are forced out. Hopefully they leave peacefully and go on vacation for an extended period. And we see new transitional governments that are not immediately democratic, but are moving in a democratic direction. That would be a wonderful thing for us and the people of the region.
We'll talk again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joy.
Jeremy Suri, Professor of History, Director of the European Union Center for Excellence at UW-Madison. We will join National Public Radio coverage of the president's speech coming up in just a moment. And we will talk more after one on Talk of the Nation.